Happy Star Wars Day. Jessica Meterson and I are celebrating May the 4th by asking judges what Empire Strikes Back means to them, plus their legal analysis on one issue from the film. We hope you enjoy this special episode that was recorded in separate parts with each judge. Our judicial interviews include Circuit Judge John Owens from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, New York Judge Matthew Sciarrino, Acting Justice Supreme Court at Kings County Supreme Court, and Los Angeles County Superior Court Judge Carol Nahara. We hope you enjoy each interview and some thoughts on Empire Strikes Back after we hear from the judges.
We want to welcome to with us here today for our special May the 4th podcast, Judge Owens of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Your Honor, thank you so much for joining us.
It's always good to be here. You guys do a great job, and I love talking about the old Star Wars movies, as we call them in my house.
Yes. I like to call them the classics, but yes, we have the same thing. Yes. So, and we are here to probably discuss the most classic of the old films, right? The Empire Strikes Back. It has a big anniversary this year, which just is another reminder of how old I've become. And so I will make the presumption that you're about the same generation as me. So I'm assuming The Empire Strikes Back is a movie that strikes a chord with you.
Absolutely. It's my favorite Star Wars movie. And I remember, well, I believe I saw it in the, I think they called this the Century Theaters in San Jose on Winchester Drive across the 280 freeway.
Wow, and that is a good memory.
I'm parsing that together in part through circumstantial evidence because I'm thinking that must have been where I've seen it. I know I saw Wrath of Khan there. I know I saw Raiders of the Lost Ark there. So you see a pattern. So I'm pretty sure that's where I saw it. But to understand the impact that Empire had on me, I think you have to go back to Star Wars. Because so let's start with Star Wars just for a moment. Star Wars 1977.
Right.
The New Hope. And I'm 6 years old. One of the first movies I remember seeing in a theater. And at the end of the day, it's such an uplifting, feel-good movie. You know, you have this kid from nowhere, doesn't have parents, lives on this horrible place with that uncle and aunt, and he saves the universe or the galaxy from evil. Now, sure, he does some things, you know, he kills thousands of people on the Death Star, and that Obi-Wan Kenobi guy, you know, he gets killed, and that's all sad. But at the end, he gets his medal, and R2-D2 jumping around, and there's this big celebration, except for Chewbacca, but we can leave that aside. Everyone's very excited at the end of Star Wars. So that's 1977, and actually 1978, because people kept seeing the movie over and over again.
Wow, yeah, back when they used to stay in theaters.
Correct, and there was no VHS, there was no internet, there was no nothing. All we had in between Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back, which was 3 years. And when you are six, when you're 6, 7, 8 years old, 3 years is a really long time. So what did we have in between, right? We had the trading cards, which all they're doing is just taking stills of the movie and repackaging them and cards. That's all they did, but you know, there was the blue set, there was the green set.
That's right. I forgot about those.
You know, and but that's how you stayed current with the movie. It was brilliant by Lucas. There was, of course, the holiday special, the Star Wars holiday special, which I watched it live. I thought it was great when it was on. I've gone back and watched parts of it, and maybe not so good.
And for the little kids, though, that was awesome.
Yes, and they had the Boba Fett promotion where if you bought a certain number of Star Wars figures, you could take the proof of purchase and mail them in, and you would get a Boba Fett doll.
Ooh.
That was really it. So all of a sudden now it's 1980, and we're thinking this is going to be uplifting again, right? Like Star Wars was uplifting, the original.
Right.
Well,
you guys win.
Empire was a lot of things. Like you said, I think it's the greatest Star Wars movie of all of them, but I would not say it's uplifting.
Mm-mm.
No, Empire is not a feel-good movie.
No, it's not. And especially, I mean, you know, I don't want to speak for you, but as a kid too, I mean, it was a lot of emotional gut punches. I mean, I'd pretty much seen Disney movies and then the Star Wars movies at that time. And there was a lot of intense things in there.
Oh, sure. I mean, look, the beginning of the movie, Luke Skywalker gets attacked by that Wampa, whatever you call it, the snow monster.
Right.
And the solution then is to cut open the stomach of the Tauntaun and shove Luke inside. Now, I mean, in Star Wars, we did have the guy getting his arm cut off in the cantina. But other than that, there was nothing in Star Wars even remotely close to stuffing Luke inside the corpse of a Tauntaun. And that's like the first 5 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
And then from there, you have Hoth base destroyed. And a lot of Luke's friends get killed. Luke gets his hand cut off, finds out his dad is the one who cut off his hand.
Oh,
and his dad happens to be this, you know, psychotic mass murderer.
Yes. And really bad Han boss. Terrible
in every way. Han gets frozen in the carbonite and has that horrible look on his face.
Mm-hmm.
C-3PO gets ripped apart. I mean, there's nothing feel good about Empire Strikes Back at all. And
no.
So I think why that resonated with me as a kid was because in many ways it was the first grown-up movie I'd ever seen.
Yeah.
Where,
yeah, that's true.
You know, the good guys don't win. The nice guys finish last. Even worse, they're basically finished at the end of that movie.
Yeah.
And so that's why I think it had such a big impact on me, because it was one of those rare, I mean, it's not a kid movie, but it's a movie that appeals to kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those rare movies where, you know, the Ewoks are not dancing at the end of that movie.
No.
You know, they are not. And
no.
So that's why I think really had a big impact on me.
I think those are all excellent points. And I do have to say, my kids don't appreciate it. Of course, they're teenagers, so they pretty much roll their eyes at everything I say. But the Han being frozen in carbonite, I mean, that is something that idea, that moment, that, you know, Leia telling him, I love you, and he says, I know. And then you watch him being lowered into this thing. I mean, that to me, it was traumatic, but it was also just, yeah, that emotional moment that, holy smokes, I could, to this day, it's still, every time I watch that scene, it still hits me, you know, very emotionally, I think. So that was, I don't know how you come up with that idea, but that is a crazy idea, but that, it
yeah.
certainly was impactful. So.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, don't watch that scene and then go to the end of Wrath of Khan in the same evening.
Yes,
that's a rough one.
That would be very hard. I know. It was a hard time. It was a dark time. So, but
yes.
It was, and again, I think that idea, maybe that's why, I don't know if you agree with this, but maybe that's part of why Empire Strikes Back sticks with us, is that, I mean, again, it is in theory sort of for kids, also for adults, but so many kids love it, but it isn't the nice, pretty Hollywood ending, right?
No, correct. It reminds me, I mean, a later movie is similar, which I thought was fantastic, was Rogue One. Where,
oh, yes.
Hey,
yeah.
At the end of that one, boy, talk about a downer.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I think
Rogue, out of all the, what I'll call the latest pantheon of Star Wars movies, for me, Rogue One was by far the most meaningful and by far the best, in my opinion. And I think because, for me, it has some similarities to Empire Strikes Back.
I hadn't really thought about that, but I agree. I was surprised by how much I liked Rogue One and how it does seem different from the others. In that, yeah, maybe the good person with the Force doesn't just win.
Yes.
And so instead you do have this just people scrambling, people fighting against bad, where they keep on fighting. Even when they know the bad's probably going to win and they're probably going to die, they keep doing what they know is right. And that's, I think that's a real message that resonates with people.
Yes, yes. Certainly much more than the last two of the, I'll call them episodes 8 and 9.
Yeah, I had fun with them, but I'm like, it's definitely a change now. Well, so let me ask you, speaking of the Carbonite, because that obviously is, again, probably for me, there are many moments, Lando, Cloud City, all that, that I think about whenever I think of Empire Strikes Back, but Carbonite is number one. So, you know, as a judge, what do you think? Is that an appropriate remedy for any government body to use?
Well, I think to analyze this question, you got to take a step back and say, how did we get here?
Okay.
Right? So why was he placed in the Carbonite? So specifically as to Han, he's placed in the Carbonite because Darth Vader wants to test it out because he wants to put Luke in the Carbonite. But, you know, I had frankly forgotten about that wrinkle in the story. Everyone remembers, you know, Han being put in the Carbonite because Jabba wanted him. And it's not actually exactly what happened, but
right.
Jabba wanted Han. So let's say first, Jabba decides he's going to send out these bounty hunters to grab Han Solo. Now, in the United States, bounty hunting is legal in most jurisdictions.
Okay.
Legal state of California, for example. But you can't hire bounty hunters to collect on gambling debts or smuggling debts in this country. I guess you could hire them, which is not legal. Bounty hunting is permitted in a very limited circumstance, is when someone has been charged with a criminal offense mm-hmm. and the judge sets out a bail amount. A bail bondsman will pay the bail, which then requires the defendant to show up at court appearances and do other things. And if someone does not appear in court, that means they jumped bail. Then the bail bondsman can use the bounty hunter to grab the person, the criminal defendant, and haul him to court.
Okay.
So first, could Jabba use bounty hunters in this country that way because of a smuggling debt? The answer is no. But let's assume for a second that he could.
He could be the government, right? In theory.
Right. and who knows? On Tatooine, you never know. So let's assume for a second that it was a somehow governmentally sanctioned way of getting to Han Solo. Could you actually use carbonite? You know, I've heard worse arguments as a judge, I have to say. I think because here's why. Carbonite is a way that you can immobilize someone. And as from what we saw in Return of the Jedi, they can be revived successfully. Now, I think there were some nervous people in Jabba's palace when that was going on. But the fact is, it is a way to grab somebody. And actually, I'll fast forward to The Mandalorian, where it's pretty clear that this technology is used all the time. In that episode, when the Mandalorian has that whole almost like deck of frozen people on board his ship. So it looks like by the time of The Mandalorian, it looks like maybe the safety features have been worked out. So that being said, bounty hunters are allowed to take physical custody of a person. They are allowed to do it, and they're allowed to restrain them.
Hmm.
So that being the case, you know, carbonite. Like I said, I've heard worse arguments than the jobs. I think it's a plausible argument for the bounty hunters. I really do.
All right, well, let's hope then that technology never makes its way to the U.S. because I am pretty terrified. Although at the same time, of course, the other option that I hadn't caught until last night when we rewatched was they talk about what he was basically in a state of deep hibernation. So then it did make me think of briefly the people who, you know, what, the people who, is it, what was the baseball player? I should see about this, who like froze his head or something. Who was it?
Ted Williams? That was Ted Williams.
So I'm like, maybe people could use this, you know, if they're like, look, I've got this illness that's going to kill me. I'll freeze myself in carbonite, and maybe in 100 years you can cure me. But that's how it's a little bit less creepy than bail jumpers being frozen in it. But
I have never ruled on the legality of cryogenics, and I probably never will.
I don't know. California, it seems like the odds of ruling on that sort of case are higher than other places.
Yeah. I guess it could happen.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Your Honor, for taking some time to talk to us about this movie. Is there anything else you want to say about Empire Strikes Back? Moments you love or moments you hate as you rewatch it?
Well, it just brings me back to a time, and I have friends who work at Disney, so, you know, I want to be careful, but that was a great era of movies between Empire Strikes Back, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Wrath of Khan.
Yeah.
And someday I hope the movie industry gets back going again. And if it gets back going again, look back to that era The movies were not that expensive to make. And there were so many memorable movies from that era 40 years ago that are still being watched left and right. And so I hope the writers today can go back and look at what were they doing back then, because they certainly were doing something right.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And yes, hopefully someday we can actually all go back to the movie theater and have a communal experience, like the gasps that went through the theater when Darth Vader revealed that he was Luke's father. That is the sort of thing that's fun at home, but is better in a theater. So I look forward to the day when we can all be back in a theater together. So
for sure, for sure.
All right. But until then, stay safe. And may the force be with you, Your Honor.
And live long and prosper. I know a different show, but nevertheless.
It's a good one. Thank you very much.
With me is New York State Judge Matthew Sciarrino. Your Honor, how are you today?
I'm good. As far as good as we can be.
We're sheltering in place, but it's after hours. And Your Honor, it's good to see you, and I'm glad you and your family are safe.
I'm in my pink courtroom, what used to be my daughter's room, which I've commandeered to take care of my conferences and other things during the week.
I'm sure the Mickey Mouse is on the wall, make everyone feel safe and relaxed. So, Your Honor, when did you see Empire Strikes Back?
So it came out in 1980. I was 12 years old. I had just moved to Massachusetts the year before from New York. So I could no longer just walk to the theater like I used to be able to when I lived in Brooklyn. So I was dependent on going with friends and their parents driving us. Or my parents driving us, my parents had no interest in seeing this movie. So I think I saw it about a week after it opened, and I saw it with a bunch of friends, and one of their moms took us all to the movie theater. So it was within the first week. Well, although I have to admit, I knew the big surprise reveal. Even before it came out, because a graphic novel of Empire Strikes Back had come out and I made the mistake of reading it. So I knew the relationship between Vader and Luke before seeing the movie.
I'm sorry, that was surprised for you. That's unfortunate, but God bless that mom. She earned her sainthood that day, taking a bunch of kids to go see Empire Strikes Back.
I think there was
Back.
About five or six of us that she took to the movies, and I think Burger King afterwards.
Somebody should be sending her flowers. God bless her. That's amazing parenting right there. What did the film mean to you, and has that meaning changed over time?
It's still, in my opinion, the best film, and I think overwhelming. You know, polls show that it is everyone's favorite movie. Some people complain, your friend Matt Weinhold is one of those, complains that, you know, it really has no story. There's no real beginning. Nothing really happens. They end, you know, just kind of flying around, and they began just kind of hanging around on the planet Hoth. I disagree. I mean, I think I also like that somewhat that the Empire wins that movie. But I really like the character development, the Vader Luke relationship really, you know, begins is the most telling part of that movie, and it then spans everything else that happens in the Star Wars universe. So I think it's a very, very important movie in as far as the Star Wars story.
That I agree. And it is an amazing film. Pivoting to...
It also had the playset that I probably played with the most. The Hoth playset was one of my favorites. You could do a lot if you had... I know you also had the AT-AT Walker. And the amount of hours recreating the Battle of Hoth, I couldn't begin to count. And I still have my Hoth playset with some of my original Hoth figures in my office now. I don't play with it as much, but I certainly played with it a lot then.
It's, yeah, that Christmas morning, 1980, we got the AT-AT, and my brother and I each got a snow speeder. And many hours were spent with that. And my cousin, who's a year younger, got some of the Hoth playset, which was like the gun turret.
Right.
And you know, we had the Tauntauns, and yeah, those were amazing toys. Just peak of childhood happiness right then and there.
And in the, you know, the video games of today, the various Battlefront type of games, the Battle of Hoth is still my one of my favorite places to play video games, whether it's on the Rebel side or the Imperial side. Just that sheer white background and the snow and the explosion, it's just a great battle to recreate.
It is. I mean, and I'll admit that, you know, as we're gearing up for May the 4th, I did see that they, you know, one of the special edition black series was of the Hoth Rebel Trooper, and I was seeing it was selling out on various websites. So I found one that still had it, and I figured, you know, I better order this now or forever hold my peace, because I don't know how long it's going to take for them to produce more of them. And so, yeah, that was my indulgence for the day of I will order a Star Wars toy. And I'm 45, and I'm proud that I did that, because I mean, for both my brother and my cousin, I think those would be wonderful Christmas gifts. You know, whether it's the 3.75 or the Black Series, that like it means a lot to both of them. So I think it's a, you know, perfectly wonderful gift to give somebody.
I finally was able to acquire a nice probe droid several years ago, and I was very excited that I finally got one that really looked nice. It's now in my Hoth playset.
My cousin had one. We didn't. I remember that you could like push a button and like the legs would blow off, like it got destroyed.
Explode off, right?
But yeah, we did not have one of those. So I got to visit with one. But again, the things that make me happy. And just that wonderful connection because of that feeling of awe that Empire Strikes Back inspires in people of all ages.
It's kind of unfortunate, and you know, part of it being there's no Toys R Us anymore, but you know, if I walk into a Walmart or a Target of late, the display sections and the amount of Star Wars toys available are so small compared to what was available when a movie came out back in those days. I mean, the Empire Strikes Back, the sheer amount of toys that were available at that time period when that movie came out was huge. There was hardly any Rise of the Skywalker toys out there other than, you know, a few collectibles here and there.
Yeah, it was, I mean, they learned from the first movie and they were ready for that Christmas of 1980. And it was a wonderful experience. Right? So I applaud your collection, and I do enjoy seeing the photos of it. And it's nice to see what you've been able to pick up, you know, with the past, with the upcoming Star Wars Day and all the early releases. Since we've been discussing Hoth, let's pivot to some legal analysis. You know, could you share some of your military law experience? Because that's going to play into the next question.
I served in the state guard, which is kind of like a reserve to the National Guard, for a decent amount of time as a JAG officer, and as well as in the headquarters as well for both the G2 area and the G1 for probably the longest amount of time, where I was one of the assistant adjutant generals, which basically means someone that does a heck of a lot of paperwork and a lot of orders. But I certainly spent a lot of time dealing with various military law issues on the state level, as well as helping people to get all of their stuff ready that were mobilized was one of our key roles as well.
Well, let's talk about that great Battle of Hoth. So we have General Veers, who's in one of the lead AT-ATs leading the invasion. And because of the shield generator, that they have to do a ground assault. So it's not just an air bombardment. So cool. Star Wars, we see lots of war crimes. What's your analysis of Veers' attack on Echo Base, on whether it was valid and whether any war crimes were committed in that assault?
I think this is actually one of the few areas where there were no war crimes, in my opinion. You had a uniformed force, the Empire, battling another uniformed force, the Rebels. The Rebels actually had a pretty distinctive uniform, as did the Empire with their stormtroopers. And this was a war between two entities. Arguably, the Rebels did not have any legal status, but they were involved in a civil war. At that point, there were planets that were backing them. So you can argue that they were a legitimate government and trying to change another government. So I think you had a legitimate battle between uniformed combatants. There was no civilians in the area. Everyone that was a military combatant. There was no targeting of hospitals or anything along those lines that would arise to a war crime. So I actually think that this was a legitimate war engagement between two legitimate parties at this point.
There's a scene as the Empire is winning the battle that we see rebel troops fleeing and they're being shot at in retreat. Is that lawful? Are there any issues with firing on a retreating force?
They were still in active war at that point. You know, I don't think there was any, if they had attempted to surrender and put their hands up, and then at that point that they were killed, arguably they would be violating what we would have as a Geneva Convention, whether they have a similar thing in the galactic universe. Assuming that they did, I think that they then would have an issue. But the simple act of retreating, you're still an enemy combatant, and they have the right to take out an enemy combatant until the point that they surrender. Then arguably certain rights as a prisoner would attach.
Very good. That part I was curious about, because the rest does seem like it's a straightforward assault and they win. Now, granted, I think there's some strategy issues that could be discussed, but I think it's a clean fight and there's like no question about civilian casualties, targeting of civilians, any of the things that normally give us pause and are an example of a war crime in Star Wars, that doesn't happen here. And which is why I think it's such a...
And General Veers actually is wounded in when his AT-AT kind of goes down. And in some of the extended universe, he actually loses his legs. I forget which. He was not a big believer in bionic parts. So he actually then spent his days in a hypo chair, with regards to his military career. And then there's some more extended universe that him hooking up with some of the Imperial warlords. His career high point was that battle. It really never went further than that battle.
The Imperial Handbook that I picked up at Disneyland actually has a war report from him that has AT-ATs and street-to-street fighting with rebel forces. And it sounds like something out of, Iraq with street to street fighting and heavy armor.
Yeah, he actually taught AT-AT tactics after this battle for a while too, because of his not being able to be on the front lines anymore.
Again, he's one of the few Imperials that seems to have a clean record of a legitimate fight.
Yes.
Which is kind of a rarity with dealing with the Empire, because you see them, like with Thrawn and Rebels, it's like, just target the civilians. Or Tarkin, I mean, sure, Doctrine of Fear, blow up Alderaan, but even in Rebels, it's like, go squeeze Lothal, which... both like he and Vader had that approach on, again, torture the civilian population. And we don't see Veers do that. And that's refreshing. So with that, Your Honor, any other thoughts on why Empire is your favorite Star Wars movie?
It introduced Yoda, which is such a great character. Yoda really becomes the conscience of the Jedi Order, as we learn in the prequels. It made Vader not just a robot, but a living, breathing person in that costume, which I think really impacted the rest of the movies as well, because, he wasn't just this, unfeeling man in a black outfit. There was some conflict there, and that was all set up in Empire. It's still one of the better lightsaber battles. I think the Vader, Luke Skywalker battle, you get the beginnings of the Leia and Han relationship. Almost everything can be brought back to the Empire as far as the relationships between those characters and their friendship. I mean, you really saw how Luke left Dagobah to rescue his friends, and goes back to the latest movie with Rise of the Skywalker, when Lando is telling them what they had that enabled them to still keep hope. And it was that friendship. And that friendship, all of those relationships, Lando, Han, Leia, Luke, really Chewbacca, all come from the Empire movie.
Well said, well said. Well, Your Honor, we appreciate your time and hope you continue to shelter in place safely, and wish you all the best. So... May the fourth
be healthy. Stay safe, everybody.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And may the fourth be with you.
Up next is Judge Carol Nahara. Your Honor, how are you today?
I'm doing really well.
Your Honor, when did you see Empire Strikes Back?
I saw Empire Strikes Back about 3 days before it actually opened in the theaters. What few people know is that George and Marcia Lucas, at the time that Empire came out, actually donated a great deal, several buildings, the editing building and many movie buildings, to the University of Southern California, where I was a sophomore at the time. And as a result, for a fundraiser, they had the movie premiered there in one of the buildings. And at that time, I was a work study student working for the Department of Development. So a few of us were assigned to basically work that event. So I got to basically check people in, check in all of the folks who came to the event. And then I got to sit up with the projectionist, because this was back at the time when they still had the projections, and sit and watch the movie. And it was, I was the envy of all of my friends and family. I saw that movie and my jaw dropped, and I came home and it was like, what was it about? And it was like, I can't tell you, Lucas, that Darth Vader is Luke's father. I can't tell you any of this stuff. And I got a wonderful souvenir. I spoke to the projectionist when it was over, and they were folding up the posters, and they gave me the movie poster, the actual movie poster from that event. It's up there on my wall. And it was just an amazing experience. I got to meet so many people, and I just watching it there, I wanted to go to the movies a few days later and watch it 3 times in a row. I was totally... I had so many theories, and at the time we used to get together and discuss our theories on Star Wars and what was really going to happen, what was going to happen next. Nowadays, I guess you'd call it fan fiction. And but back then, it was just people get together and talk about it over coffee and whatnot. And I can't believe how wrong we were. Nobody saw any of it coming.
Why do you think Empire connected so well with you?
I think it connected so well to me because, first of all, the original story connected so well. And it was something that left you wanting to know what's going to happen next. And oftentimes when stories do that, unless the second one and the anything that comes after that, the sequels, they never live up to it. And only in epic stories like the Lord of the Rings trilogy or something like that do the second and the third really live up to what you expect and don't just deliver a rehash of what the first one was. And this was unique, I think, in that it was one of the first sequels that simply wasn't a complete retelling with a few little tweaks of the original story. It was a completely different story, yet it advanced all the characters, and it emotionally advanced all the characters, which had never really been done before, in my opinion, in movies that had been in my experience to watch. And it delivered, but it delivered with such a punch to the face that it hit you viscerally. And as a result, you remember something you'll remember your entire life. You leave that theater, your eyes are open, and it's like, I've never experienced something like that before. And it is such an epic story that I didn't read. And that, I think, is why it so resonated with me.
So let's pivot to the law. Now, there are many wonderful legal issues in Empire. And you identified some with Freezing Han and Carbonite. Your Honor, what are your thoughts on the legality of freezing Han Solo and Carbonite?
Well, this is a multi-layered issue. And you wouldn't think that. You'd think, well, he's frozen in Carbonite. That doesn't seem like it should be legal or right. But there's a lot of nuances that we're going to go over, and we're going to go over them really carefully. So the first question you have to ask yourself is, when Darth Vader ordered the bounty hunters, put out an order of arrest on Han Solo, Luke, and Leia, was he acting under color of authority? And the question becomes yes or no. So let's say, given that the Emperor is the supreme authority at the time, and he is his chief deputy, for lack of a better word, we'll say that yes. And is that a lawful order? Does he have probable cause to put out an order of arrest on these folks? Are you sure he does? Because it had been proven that they're basically, there are charges of treason and sedition that could be leveled against these folks. They are rebels. They're trying to overthrow the government. They are technically terrorists. So yes, they can issue a rendition order. And that's what he did. So he's acting under color of authority, and he's issued what could arguably be called a legal rendition order. So off goes Boba Fett to find them in Cloud City. When they're actually captured, that arrest, once again, legal, they can rendition him, they're taking them out of Cloud City. Now we get to, is he acting beyond the color of his authority? He allowed Boba Fett to place just one of them, Han Solo, in Carbonite. Start with the simple stuff, shackling. Is this a form of shackling? Well, it is. He's basically being held in a manner that does not allow him to exercise any kind of physical freedom. Now, in California, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals said as recently as December of 2019 that shackling in a way that prevents your basic needs is unconstitutional. The case that they were talking about in the Ninth Circuit was a mentally ill woman who was shackled to the bars of her cell and could not use the toilet facilities. They said she could be allowed to sue the Department of Corrections for that. Now, also we've had, up until 1998, we used in the county of Los Angeles, stun belts, which were a belt that was used to shackle a person. And if the person acted up, they could be given 9 volts of electricity through their body. And in 1998, an individual named Ronnie Hawkins in the city of Long Beach was zapped with a stun belt. The judge ordered him zapped. Once again, he sued. The stun belts were gotten rid of, but at that time it was legal. And it was never, it's not so much criminally illegal as the individual had the right to sue. And in Ronnie Hawkins' case, he sued for $275,000 and got it. So it's all, the results have always been civil lawsuits. So technically you could say that yes, if Boba Fett was acting under the color of authority of Darth Vader, Han Solo, what he did wasn't illegal, but it's possible that he and Darth Vader could be sued by Han Solo. Now we move into the next section of that, which is, okay, but isn't this violating his due process? Because he's basically being incarcerated, not indefinitely, but at least until he's turned over to the civilian authorities on Tatooine, which in this case is Jabba the Hutt. And we would assume for trial, but of course, that's, we're using those terms loosely here, because on Tatooine, the civilian authority didn't really worry about the niceties of due process. So he's being shackled in violation of his due process rights. And it's cruel, and it can be argued that it's also, even if it's under color of authority, it's cruel and unusual punishment. Because once again, it's much like solitary confinement. He's all by himself, basically covered in carbonite. He can't move. He can't talk to other people. It's classic solitary confinement. And in many states in this country, that is illegal. And in fact, the UN Special Report on Torture discusses the fact that solitary confinement should be, and they do consider it to be torture, to be something that horrific that, you know, we shouldn't be doing it. Now the question becomes, well, wait a minute. Did Darth Vader exceed his authority by turning him over, in which case all of this was not being done under color of authority? And well, let's look at that. Yes, as I stated previously, the arrest for treason and sedition was legal. But then when Darth Vader turned Han Solo over to Boba Fett, he basically is conceding his federal authority to the state. Now, when a person, let's say, is arrested for treason, but the state has a case against him for murder, and we've seen that happen, before the state can take control of that individual and shackle him or put him in solitary confinement or do any of that stuff, he has the right to be heard. He has a due process right to be extradited. Now, we all saw that scene where he basically says, where Darth Vader tells Boba Fett, "I want Skywalker. I don't care what you do with the rest of them. Solo is yours." And he's like, "Fine." Well, I'm not sure that that would fall under the parameters of a legal extradition, wherein the state authorities, or in this case, we'll call it planet versus the giant authorities, have the right to do that. So it seems to me that at that point, Boba Fett, like Dog the Bounty Hunter in Mexico a few years back, is guilty of possible false imprisonment and kidnapping and assault. So that's how I kind of break down everything that happened to Han Solo there. In summary, even if they were acting under color of authority, what they did exceeded the authority, but the only remedy that Han Solo has is suing them. If they didn't act under color of authority because they so totally did not respect his due process rights, then it's an illegal extradition. He needs to be released immediately, and he can then request that the state intervene and perhaps bring charges against Vader and Boba Fett for their illegal behaviors.
We really appreciate your time, and it's so nice seeing your love of Empire Strikes Back and your love of the law. Why do you think this movie has connected with so many people over the last 40 years?
Because it tells the timeless story of fathers and sons. And I think that, you can't discount that. When you look at one of Disney's most popular movies was The Lion King. And it is the first movie that I saw where it really just, the villain, and you have, up until that time, the villains were, you know, these kind of detached figures that had nothing to do with the hero, and they were someone you could just totally focus your ire on and your wrath. And now, you know, everyone, they try to put a twist like that into a lot of stories, but the first time when Darth Vader announces that he is the embodiment of evil is the father of our hero, the White Knight. It's just something that you can't even wrap your head around. I envision everyone in the theater, their brains just exploding when that revelation is made. And it's the first time that ever happened. And it was the first time it was ever used. It was unique. It was original. It wasn't the retelling of the same old story of good against evil. It added a nuance that had never been seen before. And the brilliance and the creativity of that is not lost. When you look at most of our stories today are based on folk stories and legends of old. And that twist, at least as far as I know, had never worked its way into pop culture to the point for us to even see it coming or even think it up. So the brilliance of it, I think, is what just hit people right between the eyes.
A big thank you to Circuit Judge John Owens, Judge Shrino, and Judge Nahara for sharing their memories on Empire Strikes Back. We hope you've enjoyed our 40th anniversary of this amazing film. In closing, I want to share some of my thoughts on Empire. I saw this movie when I was 5 years old at the Century 21 in San Jose, California, next to the Winchester Mystery House. I find it entertaining that Judge Owens and I saw the movie at the same place, and I do wonder if we were there on the same day back in 1980. One of the big messages from this film is loyalty to friends. Han Solo had no legal duty to save Luke Skywalker and Hoth. Luke had no duty to go to Bespin to save Han, Leia, Chewbacca, and C-3PO. Leia and Han were both rightfully horrified they were bait to trap Luke Skywalker, not to mention Han using every trick he knew to try to protect Leia from Hoth to Bespin. There are also the bigger issues from Yoda and Obi-Wan to not give in to hate, and all the messages about being a Jedi. But one of the big ones is, you know, when Luke confronts Vader and gets the crap beat out of him. Vader says to Luke, "You are beaten." In that fight, we do see Vader enraged, hacking and swinging, and ultimately Luke loses a hand. And he takes that leap of faith to not be the Emperor's prize and survives. And it's his friends who save him. And he lives to fight another day. And that might be one of the big reasons why Empire is so endearing, is that life is a struggle. It doesn't always have a happy ending. You don't win every fight. And that's what happens throughout Empire, that the heroes survive and have to regroup on how do we go save our friend who's been frozen in carbonite and stop the evil Empire. I have many fond memories of this movie. I have many fond memories of the Christmas of 1980 and all the wonderful toys that we got, from snowspeeders to Imperial walkers. It is truly a wonderful film, and we wish all of you a very happy Star Wars Day.